Welcome to a Sunday morning unlike any other Sunday morning that we've shared together. Just to give you sort of an overview of where we're headed. First, I just want to tell you a bit of my story and what brings us to this day. Then secondly, maybe anticipate some questions you may have with some information and details that I hope you find helpful. And then thirdly, a word about our future, but most specifically your future and Mars Hill. So there's a bit of overview of where we're headed. When Kristen and I were 25 years old, we got in our 1989 white Honda Civic Si and we left Los Angeles, where we had been living, and we moved to Grand Rapids, Michigan, the future home of our prize, by the way. And it was like a cross-country drive, and it was filled with all of that. We're young, we're just starting out, and I had gotten a job at Calvary Church, 777 East Beltline. And it was like, I got a job, and we were going to go for it. And Grand Rapids was new territory to both of us. And so we settled in, and we just went for it. And Calvary Church was cooking. We were doing Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, Narcotics Anonymous meetings. We were bringing in homeless people from downtown. There was this massive choir. There was every sort of program going. It was on the weekends. There were six weekend services. There was one weekend, and the six services involved three different kinds of services. There was one weekend when I did three different kinds of sermons six times. It was that was packed. There was no room in the parking lot. There were no rooms in the pews. It was absolutely cooking. And I would sit, and I would hear these stories, and people's lives were being changed, and marriages were being healed, and people were getting clean and sober. It was absolutely exhilarating, especially for a young pastor and sort of my first job. It was like a baptism by fire. There was one Saturday when I did three weddings in one day. Like, by the third one, I was out in the parking lot, like, saying their name over and over and over again, because you don't want to upset the bride. I mean, it was that sort of excitement and that sort of, this is awesome. But I had this growing, it started with just some sort of impulses and questions, but I would look around, and the forms and expressions of that particular local church were very powerful and drew a massive number of people. But over time, I had this question, are there people for whom these forms aren't the way in, but are actually obstacles and barriers? And what if you were to strip away some of the more traditional expressions and forms, not out of any sense of condemnation about this, but just out of a sense of what the gospel does is it endlessly expands. And it's endlessly asking, who else? Who else needs to hear? Who isn't listening? And how can we speak to them? And so over time, I had this sense of, what if you did it differently to try and reach those who this isn't reaching? And I had thoughts like, well, what if instead of a choir up front, what if all the people were the choir, even the ones who don't sing very well? And you know who you are. And what if you, because for many people, their cultural conceptions of church are so tied into, oh, they just want my money. Well, what if you didn't take an offering then? And what if you tried this? And what if you tried this? And what if you experimented with this? And do you need this? I mean, maybe you could just chuck that. Well, maybe it's not necessary. But maybe this thing over here that doesn't seem to be present here is actually totally necessary. And I would run these ideas by people. I'd say, like, hey, what do you think about this? And they would look at me with sort of apple rainbow spinning wheel. Like, what? Especially some of the more prudent who would say, you're not going to take an offering? No, there'll be these boxes in the back. And you just sort of, it's just between you and only give if you're filled with joy. And I had all these sorts of completely crazy notions. And over time, those questions gained a head of steam, and the questions became a calling. Like, we got to try something new. And I had the sense that in West Michigan, with its sort of religious veneer sort of lacquered on top of the culture, that there were a large number of people who, if you could just sort of get it a little bit more raw and a little bit more do-it-yourself punk rockish. If I could find a more theological term, I would. Not that that is an outstanding theology, but there was a sense that, there's got to be some. There's got to be something. And I remember Kristen and I were sitting on the green futon in the upstairs television room that we got from IKEA, and I remember saying, like, I don't know how we'll get a paycheck. I don't know if anybody will come. I don't know how we'll get health insurance. But I have this sense, like, we got to try this. And I remember her just saying, yes, we do. Let's do it. And so we did it. And we jumped. And I said to the folks at Calvary, I have the sense that we're supposed to plant a church. And so we thought we'd call it Mars Hill. And we did it. We leapt. Because we would rather have lived taking the leap and the risk than living our lives wondering, what if? So we did it, and we called it Mars Hill. And then a couple of years into Mars Hill, at that point we were just jam-packed in the building that we were at before this building, and we were doing three services. And I remember there was an actual discussion about maybe we should do four services on a Sunday, which was basically like saying to me, pedal, monkey, pedal. And I had this growing sense, like, you could just keep doing that, but that's not, there's got to be some way to take this thing. I was setting things on fire and building things out of, and I had this sense, there's got to be some way to capture this in some form that perhaps would be accessible to people who are never going to show up on a Sunday morning in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And I had this sense, there's got to be some way to take a sermon in a film and capture it on film in some sort of cinematic way that hasn't been done. And so we, some folks chipped in and we got the resource, the money to do something like that. And we figured out, what if we took a sermon and we captured it on film in a way that you could just hand it to a friend? And I remember somebody saying, well, what are you doing to sort of capture this? And I was like, oh, well, we have cassettes. Because that's the future. And so we made the, I remember we shot the first Pneuma on, we started filming the evening of September 11th, 2001. And I remember meeting with the president of a massive distribution publication house saying, this is what we're doing. This hasn't been done before, but we know we can capture something that would, and him just saying, no one is going to want these. You realize this. You realize that no one's ever going to, maybe, I distinctly remember, maybe if you put it in the back of a book, because people do buy books, they might at the back be like, oh, what's this? And they might watch it. But it's like, Rob, you can't just like invent a new category in the market that doesn't exist. I was like, yeah, you can. Like, you can do all sorts of things. And so we made those films. And then I had this sense, this is about 2005, 2006. This old mall, for many of us, that this has become sacred, holy ground. How many of you know what I'm talking about? I mean, I'm standing on an old, the fountain used to be right here. And yet this physical space, it means something to us that it didn't when it was a catalog showroom. Are you with me? Like, how does this space, God is in this place, and we just hadn't been aware of it until now. And I had the sense, well then what about other spaces in culture? What about the spaces where other ideas are exchanged and spread? What about the places where people hear their favorite comedian or watch a play or hear their favorite band? What if I could go into those places and sort of create, what if we could alert people to the holiness and the sacred nature of all space, because the earth is the Lord's and everything in it? And so I started touring. So literally tried to convince, there's a whole sort of world industry of people who rock promoters, and tried to convince, no, I'm a pastor from Grand Rapids, but I want you to book me in that club, in between the Def Leppard tribute band and GWAR. And it was just this sense, like, there's got to be some way to alert people to what's already present in our midst. It just takes eyes to see. And so I started touring and went all over the place and discovered all sorts of things that happen when space is created in space that's generally used for other things. And then, I don't know, If you know this, but earlier this year, I released a book. And what, for me, the book was just simply a continuation of my calling, which is there are a number of people who, when you say God is love, and Jesus came in flesh and blood to show us this love, give us this love, and invite us into this love, there are lots of people who say, yeah, but what about this? But what about that? But I was told this, but I was taught that. So the book was simply, are there barriers and obstacles to the love of God expressed in Christ that perhaps if we just gave people a sense of, you know, there are other ways people have answered those questions. There are other ways people have read those passages. The Orthodox historic Christian stream is very wide, and people have dealt with some of these apparent obstacles and contradictions in all sorts of ways. And here are a few of them. Does that help you connect with the God who sent Jesus to save us, redeem us, and bring us all joy and peace? And so the book was actually simply a continuation of the same thing. Is there some way to create a new space where people who aren't listening and who aren't connected could connect, could hear, could listen, could see, and could perhaps, in their own way, peer into the tomb and find out that it's empty? That's what I do. That's why I'm here. And that's why we are talking about what we're talking about today. Because a new vision, a new venture, and a new calling has been birthed in my bones. It is a new calling, but it is in essence just an evolution, a continuation, a furthering of what's been my call all along, to compellingly communicate the way of Jesus. And this is why we're having this moment today, because I have to pursue this new vision, venture, and calling, and I can't do it and remain with you here in Grand Rapids. And so I have to leave you, and my family and I have to take a leap, because this new work is in Los Angeles, and we need to jump into the unknown. Now, a couple thoughts. First off, when you talk about Jesus in public, like I do, that's a dangerous thing. Especially if you have tears. Talking about Jesus in public, like I do, is dangerous. Because what you do is you tell people to risk, jump, go for it, step out, trust. And that's easy to tell people to do. It's easy to say to the person, well, I don't know. You know what? You're going to be fine. Well, we don't know. It's okay. The resources will come. Yeah, I don't have all the details. It's okay. Just jump, because it's easy to do that. But then there are these moments when it's you. And the thing that you have been exhorting and urging and challenging and cheering people on to do, there are moments when that thing is happening to you. And you know without a shadow of a doubt that if you don't do what you've been urging everybody else to do, then something vital and important in you will die. And that if you don't do it, something about your own walk with God will suffer. The scriptures say that we work out our salvation with fear and trembling. I love that image of we're just trying to figure it out and we're just being pulled along. But you have these moments, and I know you know what this is like. You have these moments when you know this is one of those. And you have that sort of loose-kneed, rubber-legged, oh my holy terror, oh my, and yet you know that if you don't, just something it's going to happen in you that isn't good. And you know if you do it, you'll be fine and you'll be taken care of, and it will be dangerous and intoxicating and exhilarating and surprising and challenging and difficult and heavy and light and easy and hard, and it'll be all that, because that's what it means when you follow a really, really dangerous Savior like Jesus. He's good. He never said he's safe or comfortable. He's good. Are you with me? So I've been talking to you about the life of Christ for 12 years, the exhilarating, dangerous, surprising, satisfying, challenging, comforting, unexpected, transforming life of Christ. And now something's been birthed in me and in Kristen and me and in our family, and it is that time for us to do what we have been talking to you about for a number of years. So it may not work, it may fail, things may not pan out, it may not connect, all the needed parts may not fall into place, and that's okay because it will have been joy the whole way, and then we will not live wondering what if. Now, a couple questions. Number one, am I leaving you to start another church? No. Are you kidding? After being with you all for 12 years? Are you serious? No. No. Number two, how long has this been brewing? A couple of months. To be honest, this is not some sort of long-term plan. To be honest with you, I thought I would, every time I say this, I thought I would die here. But I don't know if that's the right way to say that. And that would be a service you wish you hadn't missed, right there. I thought we were here. I love you all. I love this. So over the summer, and to let you in, some people that we love and trust and respect that we have journeyed with for a long number of years, saw this before even Kristen and I did. They sensed it. They listened. They asked questions. They challenged us. That they sort of reflected back what they were hearing. And actually, the first impulse in all of this was grieving. Because change is a form of loss. And when things change, if you don't properly grieve what you are losing, it will stay with you and it will haunt you. So the first impulse was not, yeah, I'm going to go change the world. The first impulse was deep grieving. So those of you who saw me walking my dog, sobbing, and were like, that dude must love his dog. And I was sort of like trying to pull myself together, maybe let's say mid-July. It was because I was facing, and Kristen and I were facing, in very, very real 3D flesh and blood terms, oh my word, to borrow some ancient language, the cloud is moving. And that begins with, oh, we are going to have to leave a number of things that we love and value and cherish behind. So if perhaps you received an email on Thursday and your first impulse was not awesome, your first impulse was deep grief. I get it. Trust me. I get it. My dog gets it. And I want to, there were key leaders here. I want to give a shout out to Shane, my Mennonite brother. Shane was extremely helpful and buoyant and just walked with me through these things with such great largeness of heart and spirit and just sort of pulling apart, are you thinking this? Are you feeling this? Are you? And sort of that friend who sort of, among many others, who were able to just parse it out and pull it apart and, oh, that's what it is. Number three, what exactly will I be doing? Number one, I will continue to write books. I have three of them in my head right now, and if I do not write them, I will spontaneously combust. And the problem when I write the next one, which I'm doing right now, is I'll be like, oh, now there's only two books up there, but then another book will add itself to that pile just to tantalize and taunt me. So I will continue to write. I love to write. I love the pure, undiluted slog of it. I love the blood and the sweat. I love early in the morning as the sun comes up to work on one more sentence and one more paragraph and just pour myself into this. I love the craft of it. I love the art of it. I love having something to say and then just working every morning, day after day, week after week, and eventually something starts to sort of take shape and form. I love it. So I will continue to write. Number two, I'll continue to tour, both here in America and around the world. I have a tour that starts early November. It's called the Fit to Smash Ice Tour. I know, I'm so proud of that. I'm so proud of that. The Fit to Smash Ice Tour will launch early November in Toronto, take me around the country and then eventually some places in the world that I haven't been before. And then I will be working on these new projects, which were unbelievable, shoot for the moon, pipe dream. Now that would be unreal to get a chance to maybe go for something like that. And then over the summer, actual things begin to fall into place and doors begin to open at such an alarmingly rapid rate. It's not, this sort of thing just doesn't happen. And it would be breaking new ground. It would be doing what hasn't been done, which leads to question number three, how about some more details? Three sub-points along those lines. The nature of this new vision venture, these things I'm involved in, they're a bit like high wire acts. They aren't finalized, and the creative process is such, and especially on the scale that we're working at, it might go here, it might go here, it might go here. It's better to wait, and what I've learned over the years, it's better not to promise anything and then actually deliver than to promise a bunch of things that you can't deliver on. Make sense? Number two, as these things are finalized or come to fruition, we'll figure out how to let you know, and it will be quite exciting. And then for those who listen online or those of you who listen to the podcast, will I be doing a podcast? And we'll see. I have some ideas about that, but down the road I could see something along those lines. And then question number six perhaps would be just your idea, question about timeline. And throughout the rest of the fall, I will be here and continue my regular several Sundays a month teaching in October and November. And then my last sermon as it's scheduled now will be in December. And that will be my final grace and peace to you will be in December. And then I'm told there is some sort of Wuha Shindig Bruhaha party send-off sometime either the beginning of the year, in which you will say, Rob, we love you, but now please leave. So that will be a bit of the timeline. Now, one final thought. There's a question here, an elephant in the room, and so I want to name it. The elephant, or more precisely, the question is, what will happen to Mars Hill? And I know the answer to that. You're going to be fine. You're going to be great. You're not just going to survive. You're going to thrive. You are not just going to get by. You are going to fly. You are going to go to all sorts of new, thrilling, exciting, real places. You're going to be fine. If we were to say, is this church bigger than one person? You all would raise your hand and emphatically announce, yes, a church is bigger than one person. What we started 12 years ago is bigger than one person. And so for every single person who asks what's going to happen, every coworker, every neighbor, every person at the gas station, you know the answer. The answer is you. And the answer is we will be fine. That's actually where this all started for me. Is I had a series of experiences that were unique, they were transcendent and overwhelming, and they were essentially, it was like this still small voice that actually had a bullhorn in some sort of way and just said, Rob, you know they're going to be fine. You know they're going to be great. There's a church here. There's a church here, and they're going to be great. We all know that God is big. We all know that the church will roll on. And this, as we enter into the Christ pattern, and the Christ pattern works in the world in a very specific way. He dies, and he's resurrected. That's the story at the heart of everything for us. Death and resurrection. We let go of the old in death, so that we can receive and embrace the new in life. And so we have had this beautiful, me and you, we've had this beautiful thing for 12 years. And so now what we're all going to go through the process of doing is letting go and celebrating what it has been and going through that sort of death, grieving, so that we can, me and my family and you and this church family, so that we can embrace and be open to the new resurrection thing that is going to go on here. See, if there's anything I've ever, ever tried to impart to you is that these doctrines and dogmas and statements aren't just nice abstract ideas that get you somewhere when you die, but they're how the world works. And when you trust Christ, not just with nice things in your brain, but when you actually trust Christ with everything, with your emotions, with your sorrow, with your joy, with the mixture of those, when you enter into this pattern, all sorts of things become possible. So one final note, thanks to all of you who have walked with Kristen and I through this. Thanks to all of you who have run into me sometime between Thursday's email and now, and you don't have this information or my perspective, and you've just said, love you, praying for you, got your back. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You reflect to me and you reassure me and you show me that you get it, that everything we started a church to embody, you embody. You remind me again and again of just what has unfolded in our midst, and you assure me that we won't just survive, we will thrive. I will always, in some sense, be a part of you, and to know that you have my back is a beautiful, beautiful thing. And so, in a little bit of time, my family and I will head back west. Our family has expanded and changed, but our calling has not. And so now, my brothers and sisters, more than ever, we have grace and peace. Thank you so much for listening to me. Appreciate it.
I'm John Boy from the elder team, and I'm joined by Carissa, also from the elder team. Chris and I were speaking to each other this morning and trying to anticipate what the initial reaction would be and how we would come on this stage. And we knew there could be many different possibilities, from dead silence to the affirmation that you just gave. And it's so rewarding and meaningful to be in a community that's so ready to affirm and love the leadership and our founding pastor. The elder team would like to thank you for joining us this morning to hear Rob share his heart of where he feels God is leading Kristen and his family in the future. We realize that as you've listened today and as you've heard the news earlier in the week in the paper or through the email, for many of you this has been a very surprising transition. And although we're very affirming of Rob, there's also, I'm sure, many people here who are experiencing very mixed emotions about his departure. Rob is our founding pastor. He's central to the idea of Mars Hill. He's had a huge impact on all of our lives, and we're going to deeply, deeply miss him. For many of us, it's hard to even imagine Mars Hill without Rob Bell. If you're like me, you can remember momentous times in these gatherings over the last years when, through Rob's unique gift of teaching, you were able to see the love of Jesus in a new way. And you were able to hear that radical call of Jesus to follow him in new areas of your life, in life-changing ways for you. And the exciting thing is that we've not gone on that journey alone, but here in the Mars Hill community, we've been surrounded literally by thousands of like-minded people who are on that same journey, many with very powerful stories of how they've experienced resurrection in their own lives. And I remember back to last week as person after person came up in the stage and shared very deeply and in very raw ways the way that Jesus has resurrected their life. A lot of times when a founding pastor or a lead pastor leaves a church and transitions to a new ministry, there results in a void of leadership and a void of vision for the church that they transitioned from. But I'm happy to note and tell you that I do not believe that is the case here at Mars Hill. We have 50 leaders in our elder team, in our governing teams, in our MLT teams, 50 leaders that believe in the vision of Mars Hill, who own that vision in the same way that you own that vision, and who are willing and ready to move forward with this church under God's direction. I've been with the leadership team for quite a while, and I can honestly say that I do not think that the leadership of the church has ever been in a healthier, in a stronger place. And so we want to enter into this process with you as you're processing this transition. Please know that you can contact us, and we want to engage with you. We have 17 pastors on staff who are available to speak to you if you want someone to talk to and help you process this transition. On the screen, you can see ways that you can interact with us. Feel free to grab one of the leadership after a service, email, call the church, ask to speak to someone personally. On the screen, you can see how to contact the MLT team, the elder team, and if you want to talk to someone personally on staff, the number there, you can set up an appointment. As we walk through this transition, we ask that you please join us in praying for Rob and Kristen and their new venture, but also in praying for the leadership of the church to continually seek and receive God's direction to move forward in what we believe and anticipate will be a very bright future for Mars Hill as we follow after Jesus. At this point, I'd like to ask Carissa to come and lead us in a prayer.
Would you please stand with me? God, we find ourselves in a new space today, a space that is filled with much emotion and a new kind of tension. First, we want to celebrate and affirm your calling on Rob and his family and the invitation that they have been given to bring your message of hope and redemption in new ways. We are a community whose lives have been deeply impacted by Rob's voice, his insight, his truth about who you are, his presence. We have come to understand and believe and hope in new ways and what it means to be followers of you. And that has profoundly changed us. And we are deeply grateful for this. God, we also acknowledge that the impact of this change in our community and on us as individuals, we anticipate and wonder what is to come. So as we sit in this tension, may we allow it to change us, to make us better people. May we respond to this reality with integrity and in ways that would honor Rob and his family, that would honor this community of believers, and ultimately, God, honor you, because our response has the potential, I think, to show the world how good you are. So we ask that your spirit guide us as we enter this journey of saying goodbye. We ask for your discernment as we make this transition and as we step into this unknown future. God, may we experience more of your grace, more of your love, as we choose to trust you in this process. So I thank you for who you are and the amazing gift of this community. In Christ's name, amen.